This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Taking Obamacare for a spin on this New Year's morning. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. We'll have the global perspective on business and economics in a minute. But first, today's the first day of health insurance coverage for people who have signed up for Obamacare. More than 2 million people are now covered by insurance and millions more by Medicaid. As Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports from the health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, for those who were recently uninsured, it's akin to waking up with a new car in the garage but not necessarily knowing yet how to drive.
When it comes to health insurance, consumers are confused.
So some of this stuff gets a little bit over my head.
You know, we as folks, we don't study the insurances.
Like me, I don't know what I'm doing.
Douglas Deal, Harrietta Sproul, and Gordon Griffith are not alone. According to a recent report from the Urban Institute, less than half of Americans with insurance felt like they had a good grasp on basic insurance terms like premium, deductible, and covered services.
A lot of our focus has been what we call onboarding a customer.
Brian Lobley is with Independence Blue Cross in Philadelphia, which did a recent outreach event in the suburbs.
What do we do to make that first experience not only useful to them, but understanding?
For example, he says consumers might be tempted to purchase a plan with low monthly premiums, but Lobley says that might come with expensive copays.
And you'd be better off paying a little bit more per month to have a lower out-of-pocket cost.
Insurers want the customer experience to be positive the first time out, because if it is, those customers could stick around for years to come. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
The North American Free Trade Agreement came into force 20 years ago today. NAFTA created the world's largest free trade zone and a lot of controversy. Then President Clinton promised more jobs, while folks like billionaire businessman and presidential candidate Ross Perot warned that NAFTA would push jobs south. Kate Davidson reports on where we stand now.
For Shannon O'Neill, the NAFTA verdict is clear.
It has been a net win for all three of these countries.
O'Neill is a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. She says trade between Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. has basically quadrupled.
And it's over $1 trillion worth of goods that goes back and forth across the borders.
O'Neill says U.S. job gains have been modest, but consumers have benefited. We can all buy cheaper stuff. Rob Scott is an economist with the Economic Policy Institute. He says the U.S. has lost jobs to Mexico and that Mexican workers have suffered, too.
Mexico is hit with a flood of cheap, subsidized corn imports from the United States, and that drove millions of peasant farmers off of the land and into the cities.
Scott says many migrated to the U.S., suppressing wages for workers at the bottom of the labor market here. NAFTA is 20, but not yet history. We'll hear more about it as the Obama administration pushes two new trade treaties this year. I'm Kate Davidson for Marketplace.
There is word this morning that a key index of manufacturing in China has slipped to a four-month low. The Purchasing Managers Index is for December and is a hint of the risks that China's government faces as it tries to keep the economy growing without inflating credit and real estate bubbles. Want to see Marketplace live? You can enter to win a chance to join us at the Norse Theater in San Francisco on January 28th as we discuss the new era of philanthropy. Details and rules at marketplace.org/trip. Off Antarctica, three icebreakers have so far failed to make it through to a Russian ship trapped in the ice since Christmas Eve. It's a research vessel with 74 scientists, some tourists, and crew. Everyone's fine, but now they're waiting for a break in the weather so a helicopter can get through. Before everything got stuck, I had spoken via satellite with Ben Madison, an historian who is on that ship.
What I'm doing at the moment is I'm standing on the top deck of the ship that I'm traveling on this expedition. It's a Russian ship called the Akademik Shalkalsky, and I'm surrounded by the iceberg field in front of me and the rising moon on one hand and the setting sun on the other.
And that was then. Now, poor guy surrounded by fog and lots of ice. Madison is retracing the voyage of Australian explorer Douglas Mawson, who ran into big trouble in the Antarctic 100 years ago. That's the expedition where members had to eat their sled dogs and learn the fatal consequences of ingesting concentrations of vitamin A in dog's liver. Our interest is in the economic incentives for that famous but tragic expedition.
Yeah, well, the background to that particular expedition was that for the previous 10, 15 years, there have been increasing whaling in the Antarctic waters. Britain had established a whaling industry in Antarctica. So many other countries at that time were starting to look at Antarctica as an economically viable place for establishing businesses.
It didn't really turn out that way in the end, did it?
Well, no, it did not. I mean, the whaling industry was quite a big part of the Antarctic scene until the early 1960s. But then the Antarctic Treaty was brought into play, and the Antarctic Treaty prohibited commercial exploitation of Antarctica for the life of that treaty, which I think expires in 2030. So it's coming up for renewal sometime in the next couple of decades.
That may be especially relevant because recently, there was news that there might be rock-bearing diamonds under the Antarctic ice. Could you see at some point the exploration or the exploitation of Antarctica's resources picking up again?
Well, yeah, I definitely can, David. I'd be very, very surprised if it doesn't. In the next half century, Antarctica will be, as Douglas Mawson predicted, cemented into the universal plinth of things, by which he meant the global economic system.
So, Ben, when do you get onto the ice?
Oh, when do I get off the ice?
Dr. Ben Madison is the historian on the expedition. Dr. Madison, thank you.
Thank you very much, David. A pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, and before we go, stock markets are closed around the world for the holiday. I can tell you that the Dow Jones Industrial Average in 2013 ended up rising 29.65% and will start the new year at 16,576. The S&P 500 went up 32.38% and the NASDAQ Composite up 40.17%. I know, it's New Year's morning. Have a cup of tea or coffee. It'll all be fine. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report on APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.